Coming up on Fronteras, Navajo artist Tom Gray Eyes goes big and bold in his mixed media art. At 23, one topic his art explores is what it's like to be young and native today, straddling two cultures.
A lot of us are sort of in this void between traditional and then what's, I guess, American culture. And being in that void is sometimes, like, it's frustrating.
Artist Tom Gray Eyes and his latest work. And among immigrant circles, New Mexico is a whispered promised land for driver's licenses. The state allows residents to get one even if they're undocumented, but the situation worries law enforcement.
There are hundreds of people that are gathering driver's licenses that we do not know who they are or where they live or where they're going, and it leaves us in law enforcement to only be able to speculate about what their intent is.
Up next, the debate over the future of driving privileges in New Mexico. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. President Barack Obama's press conference Monday was dominated with questions about the debt ceiling and gun control, but he was also quizzed about diversity on his second-term cabinet. Fronteras correspondent David Martin Davies has more.
It was the last question of the press conference, and President Obama was asked about the diversity of his picks for the new cabinet. He said critics should wait until the cabinet is complete, and he pointed to his record.
If you think about my first 4 years, the person who probably had the most influence on my foreign policy was a woman.
His answer was focused on gender diversity, the binders of women issue, but dodged the issue of racial diversity, and Latinos are noticing.
It's a question of optics.
Alert Brown Gort of the Kellogg Institute for International Studies at Notre Dame says Latino voters care about something more substantial.
How much political capital gets put into the immigration reform?
Gort Brown also said since Latinos are relative newcomers to national power politics, it's not easy to find qualified Latinos to fill the cabinet post.
Latinos have not produced the depth that we need yet at that level.
There's not that many Hilda Solises out there.
Rodolfo Espino is a professor of political science at Arizona State University. He says the Latino activists who are demanding three appointments to the second-term cabinet need to come to grips with an unpleasant fact.
That so-called binder full of Hispanics may not be as big as they may want.
Instead, Espino said, focus on the substance of the administration's policies and fight for undersecretary appointments. So the next time there's a Democrat putting together a cabinet, that binder is overflowing. David Martin Davies reporting.
The Violence Against Women Act died in the House last session. The law stiffens penalties against domestic violence, stalking, and rape. It's the first time the law hasn't been reauthorized in 18 years. The dispute was over a new provision that would have allowed Native American tribes the authority to prosecute non-natives in their own courts. From the Changing America desk in Flagstaff, Laurel Morales reports.
A middle-aged woman is making breakfast for herself, her daughter, and her grandkids at a women's shelter in Flagstaff. She didn't want me to use her name. She and her daughter, who are both in abusive relationships, fled to the shelter after separate incidents of abuse. She says the cycle of violence started with her parents on the Navajo Nation.
And when they would get drunk, they would fight, you know, and my dad would, you know, hit my mom and throw her down or push her, you know. So, I mean, I just remember being around that, you know, ever since I was little. As I grew up, you know, I met men that were violent.
Native American women are 2.5 times more likely to be assaulted in their lifetime than other women in the U.S., according to the Department of Justice. Many are abused by non-Native men who live on the reservation. Tribal law professor Sarah Deer says currently there's not much tribal police and courts can do about it.
We have been working in Indian Country for decades now to try to stem the tide of violence in our communities on our own terms, using our own court systems and our own police departments. And there's this one piece that prevents us from doing a comprehensive job, and that is that when a non-Indian commits an act of violence, we don't have any control over what happens to him.
Former Arizona Senator John Kyle was among other Republicans who argued against the controversial tribal jurisdiction provision last year, saying it was unconstitutional. He says, quote, "Subjecting individuals to the criminal jurisdiction of a government from which they are excluded on account of race would quite plainly violate the Constitution's guarantees of equal protection and due process," unquote. But Attorney Deer, who teaches constitutional law, disagrees.
If I go to Mexico and I commit a crime on Mexican land, the Mexican government will have jurisdiction over me. It doesn't matter that I don't vote there. I came to that country and I committed a crime. And those laws are going to apply to me regardless of my citizenship.
Oklahoma Republican Representative Tom Cole says non-Native offenders are a huge problem on Indian reservations in his state.
We need to give tribal courts the authority and the resource that they need to actually police their territory and protect their citizens.
But, he says, solving this dilemma is not a simple fix.
There are legitimate concerns about the sophistication of tribal courts and tribal law enforcement mechanisms, which vary widely.
Some tribal courts have the training and staff to fully implement the VAWA provision, but others don't have qualified attorneys or judges. A Juris Doctor or JD degree is required to practice law in the U.S., but not necessarily on the reservation. Bernadine Martin is the Navajo Nation's chief prosecutor. If the new VAWA provision is passed, she says it would take time to meet federal standards.
There would have to be enhancements made within the criminal justice system. We have mostly lay judges. We have many lay tribal court advocates. They're not law trained. They don't have JDs, but they have passed the Navajo bar exam and they can practice law in the Navajo Nation. So the implications are great.
But the consequences, if VAWA isn't reauthorized, are great as well, says Congressman Cole.
At the end of the day, if Indian tribes don't have the authority over non-natives on their territory to actually hold them accountable, then you're going to find, as you do today, a higher incidence of crime there.
Cole and other proponents of VAWA plan to reintroduce the bill as early as this month. I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
New Mexico's 60-day legislative session started this week. One topic that'll ignite fierce debate for the third straight year is driver's licenses. The governor wants to repeal a 2003 law that allows illegal immigrants to get one. She claims the law invites fraud into the state and threatens public safety. Monica Ortiz Uribe reports.
At a factory in Portales, New Mexico, a shower of raw peanuts fall into a vertical vent on their way to be roasted and packaged. This city of some 17,000 in far eastern New Mexico is known for its peanut products and dairy farms. Both industries rely on a predominantly Latino workforce. Most of that workforce relies on a New Mexico driver's license to get to work. That includes workers who are here illegally.
Fine, thank you.
If you are undocumented and unlicensed in East New Mexico, the woman to know is Rosa Lopez. She's a proud community organizer, unafraid to speak her mind.
And I work with the community, helping get the driver's license, and I help a lot of people. I help 3 or 4 people a day.
Lopez guides immigrants in this area through the application process. All they need is an ID from their home country, like a passport, and proof that they live in New Mexico.
My name is Yvonne Resendez. I have my driver's license. It's my first one.
Resendez is a young undocumented mother from Mexico who works as a hotel housekeeper. She worries about getting deported and being separated from her son, who is a U.S. citizen. Having a driver's license brings a certain sense of security. She says, before I was on foot or asking for rides. Now I can take my son to school, go to work, and identify myself. It's a privilege of tremendous value to the millions of undocumented immigrants nationwide. Yet that rare privilege has undeniably brought trouble to New Mexico. Matt Chandler is the district attorney for this region.
There's individuals out there that will capitalize on foreign nationals that are wanting to take advantage of the law that we have here in New Mexico.
Last year, state police busted an alleged fraud ring in Portales. They charged 9 people in a scheme to provide driver's licenses to at least 54 immigrants who lived out of state. The evidence of fraud is stacked in manila folders at the DA's office. They're fat with hundreds of documents, from titles to vehicles sitting in junkyards, fake utility bills, and forged signatures on false rental agreements.
There are hundreds of people that are gathering driver's licenses that we do not know who they are, or where they live, or where they're going. And it leaves us in law enforcement to only be able to speculate about what their intent is.
There are at least 10 other similar cases in various stages of the judicial system across New Mexico. Elsewhere in the country, some say New Mexico is known as the go-to place for driver's licenses. Charles Cook is an immigration attorney in Georgia. His clients tell him there is a network of people who charge thousands to arrange trips to New Mexico for immigrants who want a driver's license.
People are so desperate, they will believe what they want to exist exists. It is emblematic of the desperation caused by a broken immigration system.
Lawmakers in Santa Fe have argued countless hours on this issue over the last 2 years. Some have offered a compromise bill that toughens fraud penalties, but New Mexico's governor, Susana Martinez, says she'll refuse anything short of repeal. Meanwhile, community activists like Rosa Lopez say they'll keep fighting.
We will be taking advantage of the driver's license until the minute you say it's over with. Because we need it.
New Mexico is one of the few states where illegal immigrants can get a driver's license. Washington and Utah are two others. And this month, Illinois became the fourth. In Portales, New Mexico, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
This story was reported in collaboration with New Mexico In Depth online at nmindepth.com. There's still more Fronteras coming up. Navajo artist Tom Gray Eyes produces mixed media art. One topic he explores is what it's like to be young and native today.
A lot of us are sort of in this void between traditional and then what's, I guess, American culture. And being in that void is sometimes, like, it's frustrating.
Artist Tom Gray Eyes and his latest work, stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Mexico is remaking its centuries-old tradition of midwifery. These days, the majority of babies are born in hospitals, but that hasn't helped reduce the number of maternal deaths. So health officials are now betting a new kind of midwife, one trained in a clinical setting, may be a solution. Reporter Monica Ortiz Uribe visited a newly opened school in southern Mexico that's educating the next generation of midwives. Inside this classroom, young women sit up straight in tiny desks and answer their teachers' questions in chorus. Their round brown faces and thick black hair are typical of this mostly indigenous region in the state of Guerrero. Many are descendants of an aging practice. They're the daughters, granddaughters, or nieces of traditional midwives. They are also the freshman class of Mexico's first public midwifery school. América Madrid Simón is a slightly shy 21-year-old who sits near the back of the class. She says, when I first told people I was studying midwifery, they laughed at me. They said, that's for grandmothers. As Mexico's public health system has pushed more and more women to give birth in hospitals, it's created a stigma that midwifery is old-fashioned and has no place in modern medicine. Now, traditional midwives are attending fewer and fewer births. But that strategy hasn't necessarily worked out for the best. Madrid says her village is an hour and a half from the nearest road by foot. We have a small clinic, she says, but there's no nurse or doctor there. Picture the village of Tlaltencingo, tucked in the mountains of Guerrero. Here, bony mutts, goats, and piglets freely roam the dirt paths. People work in the fields and speak Nahuatl, their native tongue. This is where babies used to be born.
They were born into the arms of women like Macrina Martinez, the village midwife. She delivered her first set of twins almost 30 years ago. Today, she mostly does home visits before and after a baby is born. Most women in childbirth are sent to the hospital 30 minutes away. But in an emergency, rugged dirt roads make it extremely difficult to get there. Even women who arrive in time have no guarantee they'll get optimal care.
The majority of the hospitals are oversaturated, so it's a big problem.
Guadalupe Mainero is the director of Guerrero's new midwifery school. She says doctors are sometimes overwhelmed by the numbers of normal births, some of which used to happen at home. That leaves them less time to deal with high-risk births. This is where the midwifery school could help. The students' curriculum marries traditional midwifery with modern medicine. They learn the old arts like massaging bellies with long shawls, while also studying gynecology, obstetrics, and basic nursing. When they graduate in 4 years, they'll have a license and will be able to work in urban hospitals and rural clinics. But is Mexico ready to embrace these new professional midwives?
There's huge resistance to the idea that a professional midwife could work independently on an equal setting as a physician.
Dr. Dillis Walker is an American obstetrician who's done extensive research in Mexico.
The settings in which professional midwives are working, there's a little bit of friction and conflict, and then eventually they reach this point that there's a very mutually beneficial relationship.
The federal government passed a law in 2011 that recognizes midwives as part of the public health system. Guerrero is the first state in Mexico to open a public institution for professional midwives. Still, nationwide reform is a long way ahead. But the students in Guerrero will not give up easily. They know better than anyone the hardships that confront their communities and how they can help. In that way, traditions begun long ago will endure. Reporting from Guerrero, Mexico, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
This story was produced in collaboration with reporter Lillian Lopez and Round Earth Media's Mexico Reporting Project. 23-year-old mixed-media artist Tom Gray Eyes grew up dividing his time on and off the Navajo Reservation. In his work, he explores how Native young people straddle Native and mainstream American cultures. He does paintings and graffiti installations that are big and bold. They cover entire walls and appear on abandoned buildings on reservations. Frontera's desk reporter Jude Joffe Block caught up with Gray Eyes this week at a week-long printmaking project at Arizona State University. Tom Gray Eyes chooses to introduce himself first in Navajo. And English second.
Hi, my name is Tom Gray Eyes. I'm from northern Arizona. I was born and raised in Flagstaff, Navajo Res.
He's tall and wears rectangular glasses. The separation between Native culture and mainstream American culture and the clashes between them is a topic Gray Eyes thinks a lot about.
A lot of us are sort of in this void between traditional and then what's, I guess, American culture. And being in that void is sometimes, like, it's frustrating. And there's always conflicting views, too, conflicting values.
After graduating from Arizona State University's art program last year, Gray Eyes followed his girlfriend at the time to the San Carlos Apache Reservation, about 100 miles east of Phoenix.
It's a very hard place to live. It's very different than my reservation. I started doing a lot of street art out there.
They included portraits and vibrant abstract designs. One day he stumbled on an abandoned trailer and wanted to paint on it. He knocked on a house next door to ask permission, where he found a woman and a little girl.
She was an older lady, and she was, like, babysitting. And she was just drunk, and it really stuck with me.
It inspired his latest work, a two-part painting that measures about 10 feet by 12 feet.
The first image is a little girl, and she's sort of trapped in a 40-ounce bottle. She's holding these little flowers.
In part two,
the flowers are fully grown and they're sunflowers, and this shows the top of the bottle broken. I'm trying to, like, sort of insinuate that she escaped.
The bottle represents alcohol abuse. The growing sunflowers, which grow wild on the San Carlos Apache Reservation, represent the persistence of tribal culture and values.
Some communities out there, especially on reservations, like the kids grow up, you know, sort of trapped in this little, like, their family's alcoholism. And I'm hoping, like, maybe they have a part of their culture or whatever, some sort of values that they'll kind of keep, and hopefully it'll grow and it'll manifest into something and hopefully get them out of situations like that.
Losing his own culture is a theme that preoccupies Gray Eyes.
I'm very worried. Like my generation's very, very different than my dad's generation, my parents' generation. They're very different from, you know, their grandparents, my grandparents. We are losing our traditional identity for sure.
He says he's tried to find ways to connect to his heritage. He goes back to his family's land and maintains a garden each summer. His brother raises horses in the way his father taught him. But he says it isn't easy to find the right balance.
I've tried to, like, reconnect a lot of times, and sometimes I've failed, like, horribly.
That sense of loss, though, may be what inspires him to keep painting. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block. You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversations and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.